The Riot of Fashionable Virtues and a Thing Called Truth. A Classical Christian Response to Critical Race Theory. Written and read by Devin O'Donnell for Classist Journal, Volume 31, Issue 2, Winter 2024. The use of fashions in thought is to distract the attention of men from their real dangers. We direct the fashionable outcry of each generation against those vices of which it is least in danger, and fix its approval on the virtue nearest to that vice, which we are trying to make endemic. The game is to have them all running about with fire extinguishers whenever there is a flood, and all crowding to that side of the boat which is already nearly gunwale under. Thus we make it fashionable to expose the dangers of enthusiasm at the very moment when they are all really becoming worldly and lukewarm. A century later, when we are really making them all Byronic and drunk with emotion, the fashionable outcry is directed against those dangers of the mere understanding. C.S. Lewis, The Screwtape Letters. The modern world is full of the old Christian virtues gone mad. The virtues have gone mad because they have been isolated from each other and are wandering alone. G.K. Chesterton, The Suicide of Thought. 1. When ideas have consequences. Consider the following scene. A mother and father cross the threshold of the headmaster's office and take a seat in the chair facing the desk. As part of the admissions process for this classical Christian school, the parents have been invited to the routine family interview with the administration. The parents communicate their love for the program, for the attention to safety, for the high standards, or for how this kind of education addresses, quote, the whole person, unquote. But somewhere in the middle of the hour-long conversation, the parents kindly ask about the reading list for the upper school students. They express an innocent concern about the lack of racial diversity in literature and history classes. They ask why the school has not adjusted the reading to include more voices of color. At the very least, the parents ask how the school plans to answer the present call to change the corpus of studies in the humanities and how to expand its cultural representation. Why is this happening? For some heads of schools, this scene is an opportunity, a consummation devoutly to be wished, a chance to better explain to parents the raison d'etre of classical education by defending Christian civilization and Western culture in general. For other leaders, however, this moment may be rather painful and awkward, not unlike visiting the dentist to find you have not been brushing well and need to deal with a cavity. The truth is that these moments have been happening for some time now and will continue to happen. It may come from within, it may come from without. It may be a teacher, perhaps, who raises the same question with other faculty members, or who feels morally obligated to work subversively toward constructing a more equitable vision of history for students. But whatever the scenario may be, the head of school as well as the faculty ought to be able to give a more reasonable defense in the face of such pressing cultural questions. One of the distinguishing differences between classical learning and progressive education is that it is not utilitarian or servile. Education is not about information, but about formation. A student will be more or less free to the degree that he or she can cultivate virtue in oneself, right habits and affections oriented to the transcendent good. For classical Christian learning, this means the formation of Christ-like virtue, which is another way of saying the enculturation of our children in the paideia of the Lord. Because education is always about what it means to be human, this necessarily involves notions of virtue and vice on levels that are both individual and corporate, personal and social. Every education cultivates some vision of virtue or nobility. The question is how that vision corresponds to a more or less true picture of reality. Thus, when it comes to including more voices of color in the Western canon, redefining our ideal of justice, or whether we can learn good things from critical race theory, We ought to consider the simple and essential meaning of such questions in light of something that doesn't change with the times: truth. Even in our basic life, we cannot go far without encountering popular claims that essentially rest upon religious or moral premises, upon fundamental beliefs about the nature of the universe. These claims may be attended with great moral outrage, but they are nevertheless predicated on a metaphysical assumption about virtue and vice, norms and nobility. But as we shall see, herein lies the problem. 2. The riot of the virtues. If the modern world is full of the old Christian virtues, as G.K. Chesterton remarks, then sanity may appear in the form of a newly christened vice. One of the virtues gone most mad today is justice. We've heard much of social justice in the last decade, and even now, with the expansion of human rights, the social justice organism multiplies daily, mutating into new species of potential offense and resentment. We have the darkly euphemistic, quote, reproductive justice, unquote, for instance, or the, quote, environmental justice, unquote, as the White House calls it, or, according to the Harvard Kennedy School, quote, racial justice, unquote, and so on. Whence comes this disintegration of justice into separate parts? Much of it has to do with the collapse of Christian metaphysics. Not long after Chesterton was inveighing against the medicalized sanction of vivisection in science, humanities departments in the West were beginning to, quote, vivisect the united ideals of truth, goodness, and beauty, as well as the virtue and meaning we derive from them. Take justice again. Once regarded as a cardinal virtue, justice was understood as the moral virtue that gives God and neighbor their due, perhaps best expressed in the law. You shall not be partial to the poor or defer to the great, but in righteousness shall you judge your neighbor. Leviticus 19:15. C.S. Lewis says justice is the, quote, old name for everything that we should now call, quote, fairness. It includes honesty, give and take, truthfulness, keeping promises, and all that side of life, unquote. Classically understood, justice assumes a transcendent standard and is in accord with the common good. And because of this, it can be applied to all men everywhere at all times. If you leave out justice, argues Lewis, you will find yourself breaking agreements and faking evidence in trials, quote, for the sake of humanity, unquote, and in the end become a cruel and treacherous man. With the crumbling of the Christian sacred order, however, the Western social order has fragmented, resembling the antique chaos of polytheism. Justice, along with other ideals, has simply become a word to go out in the war against other words. The word justice is now only a vessel, emptied of its essential representation of reality and filled back in with some new, privatized claim on this or that aspect of life. So this modern world of ours is full of the wild and wasted virtues, as Chesterton explains. We do well to remember. This is a description of so many college courses now, or as the confusing state of progressive education in general. Chesterton writes, quote, "The modern world is not evil. In some ways, the modern world is far too good. It is full of the wild and wasted virtues. When a religious scheme is shattered, as Christianity was shattered at the Reformation, it is not merely the vices that are let loose. The vices are indeed let loose, and they wander and do damage. But the virtues are let loose also, and the virtues wander more wildly, and the virtues do more terrible damage. The modern world is full of the old Christian virtues gone mad. The virtues have gone mad because they have been isolated from each other and are wandering alone. Thus, some scientists care for truth, and their truth is pitiless. Thus, some humanitarians only care for pity, and their pity, I am sorry to say, is often untruthful. Let us overlook his backhanded insult of the Reformation and consider his main point, that virtues untethered to a coherent Christian metaphysics do more damage than the rampant vices. The reason is that a person, such as a doctor, might think they are doing good when in reality they are doing evil, such as in the practice of abortion. Consider the virtue of humility. Certainly, humility is good. Socrates was considered to be the wisest man on earth precisely because he confessed, "I know nothing." And this prejudice has in some form remained in the West and has been sanctified and in some ways amplified by Christian revelation. But what we suffer from today, argues Chesterton, is humility in the wrong place. Modesty is another name for it. But, he writes, modesty has moved from the organ of ambition. Modesty has settled upon the organ of conviction, where it was never meant to be. A man was meant to be doubtful about himself, but undoubting about the truth. This has been exactly reversed, unquote. This, in part, explains the place in which we now find ourselves, a culture that has forgotten its heritage and has lost faith in its ideals and then the divine order that has made sense of them. Martin Cuthran has said, "The reason we can feel guilty for slavery is that Western man is uniquely self-critical and conscientious," unquote. The Delphic oracle, who declared Socrates the wisest man that ever lived, knew that he was aware of his ignorance, perhaps even a bit uncertain of his own epistemology. Add to this the Christian doctrine of original sin and the need for Christ, and presto, we have a Western self-consciousness that seems to naturally sympathize with the victim and a social imaginary that identifies more with Hector than with Achilles. Hector was always the underdog in Homer's epic, and Chesterton quips, quote, "All sorts of people thought it the most superb sort of heraldry to claim to be descended from Hector. Nobody seems to have wanted to be descended from Achilles," unquote. It was a nod to the virtue of humility that Western man had ever had even a slight care for the oppressed and the guest, the stranger and the refugee. But now this virtue of self-doubt has been relocated and has resettled upon the convictions about who we are and what we believe. We believe this tendency in normal and obvious ways. Just as a man can feel compunction about his past sins, so a country can feel remorse over their corporate transgressions. Germany is haunted by the war guilt of the Third Reich. The U.S. is haunted by the guilt of slavery and its social fallout. This fact does not make the sin any less grievous. But that one feels any remorse at all is usually a sign of a somewhat healthy conscience. Thus, as Cuthran observed, quote, "We can only have these discussions and debates about racism in the year 2024 precisely because we're Westerners. No other culture does this," unquote. Although slavery was at times alive and well in Western civilization, it was also recognized as an evil in Western Christian civilization alone. But in the last few decades, this historical narrative has been altered, and the academic framework of, quote, critical race theory, quote, has sought to restructure our understanding of race, as well as to reinterpret intellectually honest historical narratives. This is especially felt in America. The New York Times Magazine's 1619 Project, created by Nicole Hannah-Jones, is one popular example of critical race theory, and is what Brown professor emeritus and historian Gordon Wood has called, quote, "wrong in so many ways," unquote. The claim that CRT is only an abstract theoretical exercise and is not usually taught in schools today is another instance of the contradictions surrounding it. On one hand, CRT has no practical effect on education. On the other, even if it is taught in schools, it's worth it to redress the wrongs of slavery in this country. However, according to Zach Goldberg and Eric Kaufman at City Journal, there is sufficient evidence to conclude that CRT is in fact being taught in schools today. The effect is that teaching CRT looks more like a catechism than a simple lesson plan. This kind of catechism, however, is one steeped in, quote, secular religion, unquote. Goldberg and Kaufman write, publicly funded schools that teach and pass off left-wing racial ideological theories and concepts as if they are undisputed factual knowledge, or that in part tangentiously curated readings of history, are therefore engaging in indoctrination, not education. But why should this matter to classical Christian schools? The answer to this question lies in a devil's mouth. In the Screwtape Letters, C.S. Lewis reminds us that the devil's job is to distract us from truth, which transcends time and place, by having us attend to the prevailing winds of popular opinion. As the senior tempter explains, quote, we make it fashionable to expose the dangers of enthusiasm at the very moment when they are all really becoming worldly and lukewarm, unquote. It is a diabolically simple plan. Quote, the use of fashions in thought is to distract the attention of men from their real dangers. Unquote. Here, Lewis identifies the same problem about the modern and postmodern world that Chesterton makes plain. It is full of a riot of fashionable virtues, noble actions, and sentiments that have been dislocated from their proper place. What is CRT in our generation but the latest fashionable outcry against the vice of systemic racism, a vice which, if we are honest, is one we are now least in danger of committing? Conversely, quote, the virtue nearest to the vice which the devils are trying to make endemic, unquote, vaguely resembles something like self-loathing. At times of cultural decline, it becomes increasingly difficult to determine whether a virtue is true rather than merely popular. But classical Christian teachers and leaders should take their cues from Chesterton and Lewis, identifying the conclusion between real virtues and their timely counterfeits. But even if we can recognize the danger of real vices, not merely those of the maddening crowd, how can we be equipped with a coherent and practicable Christian response to the claims of CRT and its parent system of thought, critical theory? 3. What is CRT and its claims? Before we consider a response, it's important to define terms. In 2022, Colorado Christian University put together a statement on critical race theory, providing a reliable template for forming faithful Christian responses to this topic. They defined CRT as, quote, a post-civil rights social philosophy, legal theory, or strategy for addressing racism and changing society. Its underlying framework, critical theory, was formed as an attempt to understand human brokenness and oppression and to point a way toward liberation. It was formulated upon neo-Marxist philosophy and worldview as developed by the Frankfurt School in Germany in the 1930s, unquote. As a child of critical theory, CRT bears all the genetic traits of its Marxist parent. Critical theory was an interpretive framework formed in 1918 as an alternative to the classical curricula and epistemology of Western culture, which was shaped and undergirded by Christian thought and teaching. If critical theory was the Titan progenitor, then it produced a pantheon of other frameworks, each with its own complex epistemological assumptions, undergirded by a materialistic worldview. critical theory is a story of human society, a meta-narrative that shows how all conflict is not a result of individual sin, but of power struggles and inequalities. In their statement on CRT, Colorado Christian University defines critical theory as a master narrative, one that, quote, reduces human associations to relations of power. Adopting a neo-Marxist framework, one is either oppressed or an oppressor. Critical theorists go on to classify capitalism, heteronormity, Christianity, etc., as forms of oppression that keep oppressed groups in bondage. It aims to dismantle these norms in order to bring, quote, true liberation, unquote. What begins in the lab often spills out into the streets. This is why education matters, for it is the primary means by which the recent proliferation of identity groups has fueled the emancipatory politics of our current age. CCU states further that, quote, critical race theory, one outworking of critical theory, critiques society through the lens of racial oppression. It denies a biblical view of human nature and sees everything through racial categories. One is either a racist or a victim of racism. Selectively, it makes whiteness the foundation of evil. Being white and non-racist is impossible, unquote. Some secular critics of CRT have pointed out that ludicrous contradictions here, noting that the maddening result of being told, on the one hand, quote, you can never understand my lived experience because you are not me and are not oppressed as I am, unquote, while simultaneously being told, quote, you must understand my lived experience and submit to my demands precisely because you are not me and not oppressed, unquote. Pastors such as Vodi Bakum have called this phenomenon ethnic Gnosticism, the reemergent ghost of an old heresy that once haunted the church in its childhood. And there is no shortage of other Christian critiques of CRT and its contradictions in thought and dangers in practice. 4. How is CRT and the like advanced? Or beware of the HR departments. It is important to note how CRT enters into daily life. Colorado Christian University notes, quote, CRT is often advanced through DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, where those seemingly benign words take on new meaning. Stripped from any biblical foundation, diversity becomes an absolute, the dominant concern of every agenda or discipline. Equity becomes not equal dignity and equal opportunity, but equal outcomes, promoting the redistribution of wealth. And inclusion is reframed by agendas that are at odds with biblical truth, unquote. And to those who believed this only existed as an academic theory, Christopher Rufo reported in 2020 detailed reports that government employees were in fact being subjected to CRT-based training programs. In his book, How to Be an Anti-Racist, Ibram X. Kendi points out what seems to be the ultimate goal of CRT. Quote, the only remedy to racist discrimination is anti-racist discrimination. The only remedy to past discrimination is present discrimination. The only remedy to present discrimination is future discrimination, unquote. Again, because the West is uniquely self-critical and morally conscientious, caring about virtue and vice, these ideas were not dismissed but taken seriously at a policymaking level. Classical Christian educators must understand that a kind of secular morality has come to occupy the place of classical Christian moral philosophy. And this has been deeply shaped by Marxist doctrines regarding power, conflicts, and inequalities. The debate has been seen in some of the more established Christian liberal arts colleges. The 2021 Grove City College controversy is yet another example of why this matters. Reports emerged of creeping wokeness at GCC, largely due to some new course offerings that studied proponents of CRT but gave no evaluation of their argument. This seemed at odds with GCC's mission, which led to an investigation. In response to the claims of mission drift, the special committee formed to look into these concerns found, quote, some specific instances of misalignment, unquote, that the mission of GCC has not changed, and that the college categorically rejects critical race theory and similar, quote, critical schools of thought as antithetical to GCC's mission, vision, and values, unquote. This is good news, as some concerned parties have noted. 5. How should CCE schools respond? As the tenets of CRT have filtered down into popular consciousness by either coercive or natural means, it is an issue with which educators in the classical Christian world must contend. We cannot afford to be ignorant or unequipped in dealing with it. As Paul notes, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty, through God, to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. 2 Corinthians 10, 4-5. Thus, whether it is a student or a parent or persons within or without the organization, we must respond in wisdom and truth as much as with grace and love. Again, consider the following statement by Colorado Christian University as a succinct model for classical Christian school and colleges. Quote, we at CCU do not believe that racism is the defining feature of Western society, nor do we believe it is the defining feature of the American founding, or that a free market economy is racist. We take issue with the 1619 Project's central thesis and favor the rebuttal offered by Robert Woodson's 1776 Unites Project. In saying this, we are not blind to America's racial sins and the blind spots of our nation's founders. We are very much aware of the sad legacy of chattel slavery, Jim Crow laws, debt servitude, black codes, lynchings, forced relocations, and various race-based laws, urban policies, and local codes. We are aware of the effect of this history on the black family. We do not believe this history should be ignored. We believe that America is not essentially nor uniquely racist. Racism afflicts all nations and people groups. We are thankful for the amazing progress in overturning racially unjust laws, to the point of African Americans rising to their highest ranks in government, business, and law. While America is certainly not the New Jerusalem or the Kingdom of God, we are grateful for the many ways in which the prosperity and freedom of this great republic have impacted so many people, including people of color. In making extreme claims, CRT asserts that members of oppressed groups have special access to truth due to their lived experience of oppression, whereas everyone else, i.e. the oppressors, are thoroughly blinded by their privilege. Arguments to the contrary and appeals to reason or objective evidence are actually, so it is claimed, white supremacist bids for power. Hence, any disagreement with CRT is said to be racist. In other words, CRT denies the legitimacy of evidence to refute it. It is unfalsifiable and hence anti-intellectual. This alone is a reason to deny it a prominent place in the academy. Building on this stance, CRT attacks the very foundation of the classical liberal legal order, which includes legal reasoning, equality theory, and supposed neutral principles of constitutional law. Furthermore, CRT is opposed to the dominant social order and proposes dismantling all oppressive structures of Western society to liberate and bring revolutionary change. Sadly, the all-too-common outcome of CRT is that it reduces personal responsibility and fosters a victimhood culture, i.e., instilling into youth a victim mentality. It also creates a culture of non-resilience, on university campuses, replete with safe spaces, microaggressions, and trigger warnings. In a strange twist of outcomes, since it absolutizes race, it actually fosters more racism and not less. Unquote. 6. Epistemology and what classical Christians actually believe. Critical theory and CRT obviously operates from a worldview antithetical to the revelation of Holy Scripture and the Christian account of reality. But this is not simply one worldview against another, both competing for dominance in the arena of secular space. Rather, it is a contest of rival epistemologies, not unlike the early church's struggle with rival religions. In Critical Theory and Christian Affirmations, a Dashboard Summary, Dr. Christopher Schlecht has assembled a matrix that allows us to compare these differences, as well as note the different and diverging points of cosmology, identity, language, and freedom. In what Dr. Schlecht has called, quote, standpoint epistemology, unquote, a person critiques the world from a position outside of the human world in which he finds himself. This leads to the ironic and impossible problem of trying to build something with a wrecking ball. There is a difference between building up and tearing down, between making improvements and making innovations. C.S. Lewis notes this difference in The Abolition of Man. Quote, there is a difference between a real moral advance and a mere innovation. From the Confucian, do not do to others what you would not like them to do to you. To the Christian, do as you would be done by, is a real advance. The morality of Nietzsche is a mere innovation. Unquote. Thus, the purpose of criticism is to correct or improve the object of one's critique, not simply to deconstruct it and leave it meaningless. If, for instance, the structures of society need critique, it cannot be done standing outside of the common human experience. Profitable criticism can only be done from within the tradition of human value, what C.S. Lewis calls the Tao. The Tao is what, quote, others may call natural law, or traditional morality, or the first principles of practical reason, or the first platitudes, unquote. This Tao is applied to all, and is, as Lewis explains, not one among a series of possible systems of value. It is the sole source of all value judgments, unquote. When it comes to our individual identity, we as Christians hold it as a first principle that we are made in the image of God, and that because of all this, all men share a fundamental identity as sons of Adam. Because of sin, however, Christians must reckon their identity by membership in the second Adam, the perfect man, Jesus Christ. A beautiful prayer in the Book of Common Prayer expresses this sentiment well. Quote, O God, you have made of one blood all the peoples of the earth, and sent your blessed Son to preach to those who are far off and to those who are near. Grant that your people everywhere may seek after you and find you. Bring the nations into your fold. Pour out your Spirit upon all flesh, and hasten the coming of your kingdom. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. Unquote. God has made all men of one blood. All this, of course, rests on an epistemology that receives creation in good faith and is grounded in both common grace, or natural revelation, and in special revelation, i.e. Holy Scripture. This demonstrates an acknowledgement of the transcendent or divine logic of the universe. Regarding CRT, however, we have a standpoint epistemology. Quote, one's social position, Dr. Schlecht argues, determines his or her capacity to know and understand, unquote. A few implications follow from this. Quote, members of oppressed classes experience structures of oppression that hem them in. Because members of privileged classes lack this experience, they are blind to these structures of oppression, unquote. This is because CRT, along with critical theory and all its Marxist predecessors, is based on seeing creation as raw, undesigned matter, where people must fashion reality as it suits them. This leads to a fundamentally violent social vision, where men and women engage in competing acts of self-fashioning, producing, in the end, a host of, quote, adversarial power differentials, unquote. In contrast to this, classical Christian metaphysics sees creation as good, a gift and an extension of God's love, who created it and called it very good, imbued with order and meaning. As man bears the image of God, he stands as God's vice-regent, called to govern himself and the rest of creation according to divine law and order. If there is a master story or meta-narrative that explains the problems of society, then it must be in accord with reality. And if society does indeed require some critical indictment, then it must conform to the logic of God's purpose and the plan for the cosmos. In other words, the stories we tell must be true, be it the genesis of the world or the founding of the United States. The same goes for the critiques of our age. Although the world is a broken place, truth remains, and criticism must be accountable for what is true. The devils, C.S. Lewis warns, want us to believe a thing not because it is true, but for some other reason. Unquote. But anything good or true has substance in reality. Critical theory, however, is without substance in this sense. It only exists as a kind of instrumental good, if at all. James Lindsay, author of numerous books on the fake scholarship and harmful effects of Marxist critical theories, describes critical theory as a kind of intellectual parasite. Using infected language, the parasite latches onto a host, often an academic discipline, and begins to feed on the life of that host until the philosophy or discipline has been completely broken down and disintegrated. Just as a vice acts as a kind of parasite of a virtue, so critical theory acts as a parasite of true scholarship and substance. This is one of the reasons why critical theory in general has enjoyed such an honored place in academia. It preys on the unique genetic code of guilt and self-suspicion in Western man. In the end, operating almost like an autoimmune disease that attacks the body. The concept of, quote, white privilege, unquote, is an example of the way this works in the domain of critical race theory. This is a fake scholarship. For some, it may be amusing to analyze a novel or a historical event, or to imagine how all white people, a ludicrously ambiguous category, are the collective source of evil. But this would be false, and not to mention boring. Lewis explains how the devils might think. Quote, your man has been accustomed, ever since he was a boy, to have a dozen incompatible philosophies dancing about together in his head. He doesn't think of doctrines as primarily true or false, but as academic or practical, or outworn or contemporary, conventional or ruthless. Jargon, not argument, is your best ally in keeping him from the church. Don't waste your time trying to make him think that materialism is true. Make him think it is strong, or stark, or courageous, that it is the philosophy of the future. That's the sort of thing that he cares about. Unquote. For those purveyors of CRT, whether or not white studies is true, or is a discipline that even remotely reflects reality, is beside the point. What matters is that it is academic. Alas, even a donkey clothed in the rhetorical garb of a lion might convince some Narnians that Aslan has returned. But it is still only a sham. This leads to a final thought on the importance of language and why true words and true speech are so vital to classical learning. Whether a word or an idea corresponds to truth, and not merely collective fancy, is one of the best means to inoculate an academic discipline against the parasitic critical theories. In a real sense, we should be cautious of totally critical approaches to learning, not merely because of their inherent skepticism, but also because of their inherent scientific standpoint epistemology. Think of the way this can be reflected in the words we commonly use to study something. We tell our students to analyze this book or that passage. But do we understand what this really signifies? To analyze, as the Greek suggests, means to loosen up and to separate. This can be good, provided that we don't forget that we are still part of the world that we are studying and that we must put it back together. We must guard our analysis of history, for instance, against the notion that we are outside of it and not, as reality would have it, mixed up in the middle of that human story. While we can gain knowledge from that critical approach, we may not always gain wisdom. This again is reminiscent of that old vivisection against which G.K. Chesterton railed in his day. If we assume that we are outside of the created order, that we are inclined to employ our studies only for power over nature or neighbor, it should not surprise us then that Screwtape knew well how to exploit the efforts of those in the quest for knowledge. There will always be attempts to create one's own private system of value. Indeed, that seems to be the whole aim of the modern secular world. But Lewis warns us in The Abolition of Man that such efforts are fruitless. Quote, "The effort to refute the Tao and raise a new system of value in its place is self-contradictory. There has never been and never will be a radically new judgment of value in the history of the world. What purport to be new systems, or, as they now call them, ideologies, all consist of fragments from the Tao itself, arbitrarily wrenched from their context in the whole, and then swollen to madness in their isolation, yet still owing to the Tao, and to it alone, such validity as they possess." Unquote. Again, we have Chesterton's riotous and rebellious virtues. In the case of CRT, it seems that racial justice and systemic racism have been arbitrarily wrenched from their context in the whole and then swollen to madness in their isolation. It seems standpoint epistemology fosters an unnatural kind of separation and division that is quite literally diabolical, a Greek word that testifies to the work of the devil because it means to, quote, throw apart, quote, to divide things that ought to be united. This is a good way to measure the substance of truth in fashionable ideas. Opposed to the diabolical, Christians have traditionally found wisdom and truth in that which is symbolic, a Greek word meaning to bring together in an image or a sign. As Christ is the image of God, we believe that all humans have value and dignity, regardless of class, wealth, or race, and we look to the cross, the historic symbol that continues to, quote, draw all men to himself, unquote, as the true and lasting atonement for sin. While it is our task to cast down imaginations or any other pretension that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, CRT or the like, we must not lose sight of the good that is common to all who are made in God's image. Aristotle and Boethius believed that virtue should not be divided, and Plato, as Lewis notes, rightly taught that virtue is one. You cannot be kind unless you have all the virtues. This is how we ought to take thoughts captive and make them obedient to Christ, not simply by complaining about the rampant vices, but by putting the isolated virtues back in their proper place, restoring order not merely to the city, but also to the cosmos. The end.